Hello and welcome to On the Couch with One Vision Housing. My name's Steve Scott, and with us today we have James Constable, who is a sales manager from our development team here at One Vision Housing. Welcome to James. Today we're going to be talking about the topic of home ownership, and an especially important topic, of course, within the UK right now, as we are facing a significant housing shortage with an estimated deficit of anywhere between 4.3 and 4.75 million homes. Now, at the Savini Group, for which One Vision Housing is part of, we have two registered providers of social housing, and we currently manage over 14,000 homes across the Northwest. Our customers can benefit from a range of home ownership tenures. So today, what we thought we'd do is we delve into those a little bit more and understand the benefits that they can have for our customers. So James, thanks again for joining us today to discuss, of course, this really important topic. So I'm really looking forward to hear your perspective and hopefully learn a thing or two from you as we're going along. So I just wanted to start off really by asking you quite a broad question, but can you kind of explain to us what the different types of home ownership tenure are and what it is that we offer here at One Vision Housing to our customers?
Yeah, certainly. And thank you, obviously, for having me. As you've said, it's a really important topic at the moment, with obviously a lot sort of going on with the political background. But in terms of what we offer from a tenure point of view, we offer rent to buy and we offer shared ownership. Those two tenures fall immediately within our sales and home ownership team, which is the team that I manage. But we also offer affordable let and social let, social rent, which falls into our neighbourhoods team. But in terms of the home ownership products, it would mainly be your rent to buy and your shared ownership.
Okay, so rent to buy and shared ownership. So what are the kind of the pros and cons in your view on each of those types of ownership, if you were to kind of, you know, give a summary of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, obviously there's pros and cons to everything at the end of the day. And I always say to our customers that if they need the product, then the product is absolutely right.
Yeah.
In terms of rent to buy, the main benefits will be that if you haven't got a deposit necessarily saved up. So rent to buy, I would say, is more aimed towards people that still need to save a deposit, but who are aiming to buy potentially a property at a later date. Shared ownership, the difference there is really that's better for people that have already got a small deposit but can only afford a certain sort of mortgage level or amount. So those are the two key differences really between the products.
And I guess that would enable them then potentially to be in a home that they're not able to buy outright at that point.
Yes,
but work towards that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with shared ownership, you're owning a share from day one. So you're paying a mortgage on the share that you own, and then you're paying rent on the share that you don't own. With rent to buy, it's fully rental initially, and the rental is discounted by 20% a month.
Oh, wow.
So to me, the rent to buy product it is really a no-brainer in my personal opinion, because you're renting something at a discounted price, something new, something modern, hopefully in an area that you might prefer that otherwise might have been outpriced of. And same with shared ownership again, really. It might be that if you have 150,000, or you're lucky enough or fortunate enough to be able to borrow 150,000, it might be that you could afford to buy something outright, but it might not be in the area you prefer or the size of the property you want. They're both good products, but what works for the individual.
And that's clearly the key point, isn't it? So just on shared ownership, and then probably come on to rent to buy a little bit more. Is there a standard in terms of deposit that you need to have to be ready to go into shared ownership?
Yeah, absolutely. So usually the minimum deposit that you would need for shared ownership would usually be around 5%.
Oh, wow.
And there's more and more lenders coming into the marketplace as hopefully confidence begins to grow in the sales market. and the economy starts to stabilise. As it stands, there's around 31 mortgage lenders that will deal with shared ownership. The majority of those will probably say a minimum of 5%.
Okay.
But the thing that you probably have to remember, and this is where it's always best to get independent financial advice, is that the more deposit you've got to put down, probably the better interest rate you'll get. So if you could actually put 10% down, mm-hmm. if you're fortunate enough to have a slightly larger deposit, mm-hmm. that will mean, in most cases, you'd be looking at a lower interest rate. So your mortgage repayment is going to be less.
It's going to be less.
Yeah, but in answer to your initial question, a minimum of 5%.
Okay. I guess that I was going to kind of say, you know, in general, if you're looking at a house around about, what, £200,000, say, just to kind of a nice square number, kind of what would that look like in terms of mortgage rent? Service charges, are they kind of included in
so,
shared ownership?
Yeah, I mean, if you were looking at a round figure of 200,000, then what, a 10% deposit would be 20,000, so 5% deposit would be 10,000.
Thank God you've got our maths right there.
Thanks for that. No pressure. The other figures that you'd have to consider, obviously, is the rental amount on the share that you don't own. Mm-hmm. And we also have a service or an estate charge, which is paid monthly along with your rental figure.
So you know the rental figure on a shared ownership, is that at full market rent?
Neither, to be honest. We calculate it initially at 2.75%.
Right. Of the total value of the house.
Yeah, of the share that you don't. The share that you don't own. So that's where the rental figure comes from. And then, as I say, in addition, you will have your service or estate charge costs, which come out monthly as well. The service charge is normally made up of an estate charge, if there is one, mm-hmm. and your building's insurance. So One Vision Housing don't cover, but we have to arrange the building's insurance,
right.
and we then claim that back from the shared ownership tenant with their other monthly figures.
Brilliant. Okay, great. Are there any, you know, it's important that we're honest, honest in terms of what we're talking about. Are there any kind of, you know, significant drawbacks to shared ownership?
Not that I can see. And as I say, it isn't right for everyone. But if you need the product, it's absolutely right.
Yeah.
And I think notoriously, a lot of people will automatically presume, you know, shared ownership's for first time buyers, for instance.
Yes.
But you know, it isn't. It's for anyone that needs it.
Mm.
You know, we have people downsizing that maybe, you know, sold a family home that might only have a certain amount of equity, you know, divorcees that can maybe only afford a certain amount. So mm-hmm. it's for anyone that needs it. I wouldn't say there are any specific drawbacks, but the only things I would say to consider are your rental figure, mm-hmm. because that is subject to being reviewed on an annual basis.
Okay.
There will normally be an increase each year on the rental figure. So you need to potentially build that into your outgoings. Possibly need to look at a resales point of view. Is there a market for resale shared ownership? So when you come to resell it, how easy will it be to resell? But I can confidently say, because we offer our own resale service in-house, mm-hmm. That resales at the moment seem just as popular as sort of your first, what we call your first tranche sale.
Okay.
So yeah, those are probably the only things to maybe think about.
Just touching on the point around kind of, it's not just for first time buyers. Is shared ownership seen kind of in any like derogatory way? Like, it's not a new product, but like, is it seen as a product that's like, you know, it's not the full hit, is it?
I suppose
stigma. I'm asking.
There can be a stigma, and possibly, dare I say, you know, sort of some snobbery factor around it. But you know, as I keep going back to, you know, if you need the product and it's right for you, then you know, it's a no. You know, it's a
why?
No-brainer.
Why not?
If it gets you to the area that you want to be, or it gets you to the size of property that you need to be. But yeah, no, in my opinion, I mean, my initial background, as you know, is estate agency before I came into housing. Mm-hmm. And I think, I hate to say it, but in estate agency, there was a stigma around shared ownership. And but since I've made that transition into housing, then, yeah.
No, you've seen the light change.
I have, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. So, I mean, obviously, there was another product that we were talking about there, rent to buy, and that was something which I know you're a big advocate of.
Yeah.
So, kind of similar type of questions. Deposit wise, is there a specific deposit, percentage that you need for rent to buy? How does the rent to buy work if you're going to get one?
Yeah. So, rent to buy, again, you know, as I've said, again, cliche, but no brainer. Like shared ownership, you're renting something in the location you want, at a competitive price, basically, because I say it's discounted by 20%. Deposit wise, the rent to buy product initially works very much like private rental sector, I guess. So you don't need your deposit to buy it, because otherwise we'd probably be sort of signposting you towards shared ownership if you had a deposit to buy it. But what you do need, which is where it's similar to the private rental market, is your first month's rent.
Okay.
So basically, on the day that you move into one of our rent-to-buy properties, you need usually the equivalent of 2 months' rent, your first month's rent, and the same again as your deposit. So really similar, as I say, to the general rental market and conditions.
But of course, that's at 80% of what the full value of that property would be. So there is some benefit to that there. Okay, brilliant. So in terms of a rent-to-buy product, is there a term associated with that? Like, is it a rolling 12-month review, or is it, is there a 10-year length to rent-to-buy?
Yeah, so basically, and this is where I say it gets complicated, but it doesn't, because we know the product and we're best placed to explain it to people. Initially, we'll sign you up usually for a 12-month tenancy, make sure, obviously, the property's right for you, you're right for the property. But the overall tenancy for a rent-to-buy property is usually 5 years.
Okay.
And the plus side of that is that you're getting, the longevity and the security of what now really is probably deemed as a long-term rent, compared, again, to the private market rent sector. It's 5 years, and within those 5 years, you can actually still consider buying the property.
Okay.
And this is where it gets a little bit complicated, but that's what the sales and home ownership team are there for. Mm-hmm. You can look to buy the property within the first 5 years, but only as shared ownership.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not outright.
Not outright.
Okay.
You can only look at buying the property outright once you get to the sixth year, so just out of your fifth year.
Okay.
And even then, if you can't afford to buy it outright, we can still look at the shared ownership option. So first 5 years, you can buy as shared ownership.
Mm-hmm.
After the fifth year, you can look at buying either outright or as shared ownership.
Okay.
So it's completely flexible. I love it. I absolutely love the product.
So rent to buy after that 5 year tenure is shared ownership or buy outright?
Yeah.
Is there an option for a further rent to buy tenure?
There is, and it's quite... I don't want to use the word woolly at the moment, but obviously we get our guidance from Homes England.
Mm-hmm.
So we're reliant on their guidance. We've recently hit 5 years on our first couple of developments. And what we've been able to do is extend them by an initial period of 12 months.
Okay.
And then we'll review again.
Change.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. That's fantastic. So in terms of questions, I've just got a couple more questions really I wanted to ask you. And I want to talk about first-time buyers, because I know we've said that it's not only first-time buyers. But in your view, kind of, what are the major challenges facing first-time buyers today?
Yeah.
And how can first-time buyers get help with a deposit? For example, are there any schemes, government schemes, help to buy, etc.?
Yeah. Okay, so I think the main challenge for first-time buyers really at the moment is being able to save their deposit. And I guess that's where the rent-to-buy product comes in.
Mm.
Because with rent-to-buy, with the 20% you're saving on your rent, you should be saving that 20% towards a deposit.
Yeah.
to either buy the property that you're in or towards another property. And that's something else important to remember. You're not committing yourself to the rent to buy property that you're in. Circumstances can change, can't they? You know, you might rent a one-bedroom flat as rent to buy, but in 2 years you might be engaged or have a child on the way and it might not be practical. So don't always, you know, presume that you're committing yourself to the property that you're in. But in terms of challenges, as say it's that deposit, really, I think. Making sure that you've got as clean a credit history as possible. That could determine what type of interest rate you get, what lenders will be available to you. So I'd always say, you know, keep an eye on your credit report, whether you're renting or buying. Because for buying, it could affect, as I say, your mortgage and the amount of lenders that will consider you. For renting, we have to put you through referencing and credit checks. So that, I would say, probably would be the first thing to really think about and to look, try and get a copy of you, you know, of your credit report.
And lots of them do online, free report, and there's lots of products available for that now, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Are there any in particular that we would view? Because I know there is a lot of different ones.
I mean, I think the main one that people probably are aware of is Experian, isn't it? But I think there's Credas possibly as well, maybe.
And Equifax and things like that. Okay, that's brilliant. And last couple of questions, really. Just what, for you, are, I guess it's quite obvious, but what are the long-term benefits of home ownership in your view?
It's a thing I've touched on it probably. For me, it would be the security of knowing, you know, even if you don't own the property outright, you've got a piece of a property in terms of shared ownership at least anyway. And if you do want it to own outright, if you're in a position where your circumstances change, you can do what we call staircasing. With a shared ownership property where you're buying additional shares in the property. And in most cases, each time you do that, your rental element's going to reduce.
So that's increasing how much you own of the property and decreasing the rental. So you're paying more to your mortgage, less to rent.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It might be if you've had a change of circumstances at work, if you've had a promotion. God forbid, you know, inheritance, you know, if whether you want to buy additional shares in mortgage or with cash, if you're fortunate enough to, you can. And we don't have any time scale on that. Each time you do that, your rental element's going to obviously reduce. And you can, in most cases, at least with our shared ownership properties, staircase ultimately up to 100% to full ownership.
Full ownership, yeah. Fantastic. Okay, so my final question would be, well, it's kind of one of two options. What's either the best pieces of advice you've ever received around home ownership, or what's the best piece of advice that you would give to somebody looking to get into, you know, some form of home ownership?
Yeah, I think best piece of advice, as I've said, is making sure that you're in the strongest position possible. These products, both of the tenures, are so popular, you know, that they really are, which hopefully, you know, sort of comes back to your stigma question earlier on, that looking at the amount of inquiries we get per property, you know, there doesn't seem to be, you know, sort of a stigma for sure. So I would say get yourself in the best possible position that you can in terms of as clean a credit file as possible, you know, and take it from there.
Brilliant. It's all very grown up, isn't it?
It is.
grown up. Well, listen, James, thank you so much for joining us today and providing your expertise on home ownership. We hope this has made our customers feel more confident and at ease with home ownership. I'm sure it has. And, of course, some of the options that they may have available to them. For today, that's all we've got time for. If you listen to the podcast and want to know a little bit more about our products and what's on offer, then please just get in touch with our customers team at One Vision Housing. Details of how to get in touch with them are available on our website, which is www.ovh.org.uk. Thank you very much again for joining us. My name's Steve Scott, and this has been On the Couch with One Vision Housing.